Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9. We're here at that conference on the stage with a fire. Like, I don't, can you hear the sound? There's like a little...
There was some smoke that came out of it yesterday.
Yeah, there was some really cool, it's like we're at a camp out talking about tech stuff. So you're Kelly Muir, tell us about what you do.
I'm a user experience designer for a small agency in New Hampshire. I came kind of far to come here.
Did you drive? Fly?
No, no, we flew.
Of course. It's a little far. So tell us about your talk. What was the name of your talk?
I gave a UX survival guide workshop for developers.
That is like the best title for me. So tell us a little bit about some of the principles you talked about during your talk.
So what we did actually is more, it really was a workshop. So we had a fictional product that we went through and we did some user interview. We did a user interview. We did some observation, just going through some principles of what you would look for, what would you ask, down to determining what the goal of the user is and how they get through that journey. And it's really just to drive home the fact that even when we're building these features, when we're building the products, we always have to keep that user in mind. And that's something we often forget about.
For some reason, developers have, okay, I'm not gonna generalize. Me, as a developer, has sometimes developed this antagonistic relationship with the customer. Because, like, let's be honest, if it weren't for customers, my code would always work.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So how do we have that relationship that lets us build good UX with customers?
Personas can really help with that. Building a persona, it's really just a fictional base of a character that really models the person that you're building the software for. One of the things I always have to drill home is you are not the user.
Right.
Developers think completely different than most of the other people who would be using the product. Mm-hmm. Along the same lines, if you design for everyone, you're designing for no one. You really need that specific persona in mind in order to build something that they will use. So very often, I mean, with Agile, that's why we have the stories written in a way as this type of user, I want this particular feature. And it's like, we weave it in, but we, without that, almost like a poster of that person, we forget about it.
I see, and that's interesting. So tell us about the fictional product that you did, and tell us about some of what the customer wanted, and how we started to translate that. Because that example of a workshop is really an awesome way to do it, so maybe you can help us sort of visualize that.
So we actually, my son volunteered to be our user.
Awesome.
And he's a drummer.
Cool.
So he takes drum lessons, but he is awful about practicing. So we were designing an app that would help him practice. Something that his teacher could put in lesson plans or something for. And I actually gave them no direction as to what features it would have. Uh-huh. Luckily, we had some drummers in the audience who could step up and be like, oh, well, you need this. Uh-huh. And so they went through the process of determining exactly what would help him, the best way to do it. And one of the exercises we did was actually, it's Crazy Eight. It's from Google Ventures design process. Mm-hmm. And you spend 1 minute drawing a concept of the interface, and then you have to move on to another box in another minute. So you spend 8 minutes sketching out as much as you can as what it would actually do.
That is such a good idea. Right. Crazy eights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we focused on one particular feature that they thought would be high value, and that was a rudimentary practice. And that's essentially just how you hit the drums left, right, left, right, or left, left, right, right, and different patterns like that that you would do at different tempos. Mm-hmm. And so a couple of the guys came up with this idea of flashing lights that would show on the screen when you're supposed to hit. And then there was some discussion, or rather, some people thought, it's like, oh, but you know, the student should be able to determine the tempo and all this other stuff, essentially having all these dials. And some other people were like, well, what if the teacher just programmed that? Because that's not something that student necessarily would know what they should be doing, but the teacher should. Mm-hmm. And of course, gamification got brought in, because the things that's going to motivate the student most is earning awards for getting best scores, things like that.
So in this case, what would the persona be? Is it the student?
There were two personas for this. There was the student and the teacher. And they have different goals. One of the people in the session pointed out that the teacher, really what they're after is making money. Mm-hmm. And the way they could do that is by working more efficiently, getting more students, and being able to follow people through this path and make sure that they're performing better.
Right.
The student really just wants to play the hard songs. It's really what it comes down to.
And so you have these two personas that maybe even are competing with the same product. How do you go about, from now knowing who they are, to how we should design it?
Right. It really comes down to not every part of the interface is for every user. The things the student interacts with, the teacher might interact with too, but when they're interacting with them, they're acting more like the student than they are the teacher. Mm-hmm. And the things the teacher sees, the student probably never will get into that interface. Mm-hmm. That happens a lot in other products as well. I used to work for a content management system, mm-hmm. and the things the developers would interact with, it's not anything the authors would interact with.
Correct.
But how often we would build these really complex authoring interfaces that no author would know how to use.
Got it. So I understand the personas.
Yep.
And I understand how to generate the personas. It's not something we do often. It's something we should
right.
do. How do you go from the persona to the radio button or the button or the text box?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yep. That really comes down to you need to do some user testing. So we start with sketching, and that goes into
crazy eights, yeah.
Yep. That goes into creating a prototype, paper prototype, or I use Acture quite often. Mm-hmm. And with that, we then take the actual users, not the personas, and we ask them to accomplish their goal using that paper prototype. And so they would then go through and you don't give them any direction. You just be like, I want you to practice this and see if they could discover how to do it.
Now, are they doing it on the paper?
You can do it on the paper. So essentially, you would have a page for each screen. And then if they touch where a button would be, you flip to the next page and you touch, and they would interact with that screen. Acture allows us to do this online. So you can, I kind of think Acture is kind of like Flash used to be. You can get some basic interactions in there.
Right.
So you can do clicks, you can do some animations, and that makes it so they don't have to be right in front of you. So you can do testing that way, and you can actually see.
That's interesting. So you want a really low barrier way of getting people to start touching the thing. And
yep.
I don't mean physically touching. I mean getting a feel for it from the persona.
There was this one metric, I think it was, that it costs $1 to make the change in a sketch, $10 in design, $100 in code. So if you can only imagine, it's like, if we catch those errors first, it's a lot easier to fix and adjust before we get to actual implementation.
This is actually bringing back something to mind that I saw, because I try to take a design class. I'm trying really hard as a developer. There's something called usability tests.
Yes.
It's a I think it's a website where you can actually crowdsource a UI
yep.
and see what people click.
Yeah. There's a couple of different options for that.
Oh, good. I want to hear more. Nice.
Their usability test, one, has that crowdsource where, they can pull people in.
Uh-huh.
If you have your own user base, there's things like Optimal Workshop has a chalk mark test.
Okay.
So you upload a screen, and it marks not only where the person clicked, but how long it took them to click there. So then you can get the metrics of that and kind of culminate it all together. Nelson had this interesting measurement, though, that it really only takes 5 users to uncover 85% of user issues.
Oh my goodness. So it's not even,
you could pay
someone 5 people $10.
Yep.
Can you come in for an hour and then just try it?
Or just go hang out in a cafe and buy someone a drink and then you get it.
That's a really interesting thing. And so, so I guess the reason why UX has become so mysterious for me is because I'm thinking too much about what it should be.
Right.
But it's not really about what
I
want.
No, it's not about you.
I love it. This is not the first time I've heard this, by the way. It's really good advice. So once you have the personas, once you sketch some stuff out, once you get a sense for what's going on, what do you do after that? Is it really go to coding, or is there an intermediate step I might be missing?
You think of it like the scientific process.
Right.
What we do is that essentially we learn as much as we can about the users. We make some assumptions about that. Based on that, we make that initial design. And then we test to see if we've got it right or wrong. If we get it wrong, then we try again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got to be, good enough. We have to establish what good enough is.
Right.
If, 4 users had no problems, but 1 user had a slight issue with this one thing, we can probably skip that and go straight to coding.
I see. So I like the notion of the crazy eights, because then if something goes wrong, you just switch to one of the other ones. So now that you've gotten to the place where you've drawn this thing, is the next step coding?
Well, design, getting to actual design, like Photoshop, starting in there, the markup,
and
things like that.
That's the other question I have. And I always ask UX people this, or artistic people, how much of that, because obviously pencil sketching is one thing.
Yep.
But then you get into color theory, you get into layout, and you get into fonts.
And then you test again.
And then you test again. But I have a hard time, my brain I don't think can process it. So how much of it is an artistic process versus a learned process?
There's, a lot of it comes down to learning.
I see.
One of the things that I always go back to is baby duck syndrome.
I see.
And it's this idea that people, software impresses on people. And so if you, like, if you're an Android person, you expect certain buttons to be certain places.
Mm-hmm.
You expect cancel to be in the same location. If you're a Mac person, that's different. And so keeping in that in mind with your actual users will go far if they're trying to touch something in a particular spot, mm-hmm. if they're looking for something, but you're not using the color scheme related to, you know, material design or anything like that.
That's interesting. It sounds like you're saying almost, hey, don't be too clever.
Right. Yeah.
Because there's already
conventions for a reason.
Yeah, there's already some patterns. And even if it's a bad convention, if it's already learned and known, you should probably leverage that.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Yeah.
So how did your talk go?
I think it went well. There's quite a few people in the room, and I had a couple of people leave when I told them they were going to have to do some work.
Uh-oh.
But most of them stuck around, and they seemed to really participate. So,
well, that's awesome. So any other tips you have for UX? I love the idea of personas. I love the idea of actually testing on the cheap with five people. You're going to get 85% of the stuff done.
Yeah.
And then we talked a little about the artistic side. Any other advice you have for UX?
It really is about talking to users. If you don't have any insights from users, then you don't have anywhere else to go.
That's awesome. So where can people go to find out more about these things?
There's a lot of resources online about user experience. Mm-hmm. Stack Exchange has their own UX channel, so mm-hmm. if you have any questions, you can post there. There's UXPA, User Experience Professionals Association.
Oh, wow.
And I think every state has their own meetups for that. So that's
awesome.
Good.
Well, thanks so much for spending some time. It was an education for me, I'm sure, for the viewers as well.
Yep.
We're here at That Conference, on the That Conference stage, having a little fireside chat. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care.